Welcome to Tales from the Dance Floor, a podcast exploring the lives and times of people from all walks of life who followed their passions and made careers out of DJing, producing, parties, dance culture, and the music industry. I'm Phil Morse from Digital DJ Tips. Let's get started. I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, Jason Janai, to the podcast. Hello, Jason.
What's up, Phil? Thank you for having me, man.
it's great. And you're so plucky at this time of the morning over there. So that's good. So
it's early in Janai land, you know, across the pond.
Well, listen, let me introduce you to those who maybe haven't heard the name. Jason is probably the premier event DJ in the United States. Jason came onto my radar for a load of reasons. He understands how to bring the nightclub to weddings and to that kind of event. Jason understands the internet. He understands millennials. He understands the Instagram generation. He's kind of made mobile DJing cool again. And he's kind of done all this single-handed. Now he's got a big company and he's going to tell us about some of his achievements in a minute. But Jason has always stood out to me as someone who is doing something new in what can be seen as a very old and tired game. So Jason, welcome.
I am so honored to be here. Thank you so much. And that was very kind. Thank you.
Oh, well, it's all true. So to give the listeners our kind of background together, I met Jason a year or two ago when I was talking and he and his company were doing the same thing at a big DJ show in the States. We kind of hit it off. We hung out and did some training together. And then we've hung out since and we're working together now, which is awesome. And Jason, I just thought it'd be such a good person to bring onto this podcast for so many reasons, not least because you had no idea this is where you were going to end up and this is what you were going to end up doing. Right, Jason?
Yeah, I tell you, if you would have asked me even 5 years ago that opportunities and relationships like this would evolve or come to life or just be created, I would say, man, I don't know. Maybe, you know, not that I was negative at all. Just I never would have thought my life would end up where it is right now. And if you asked me 10 years ago, I'd have told you you were absolutely crazy, you know.
Well, listen, we're going to go back. We're going to go way back. We're going to talk about how this all came about. But first, tell us, you know, a few more, add a bit more meat to the bones of what I just said. What's the kind of standout gigs that you've played in the last 2 or 3 years?
I've been really fortunate to do a lot of cool things for a lot of cool people in a lot of cool places. I've been not just fortunate to personally perform, but my company has performed at events all over the planet. And we are what would be considered a multi-op, even though I can't stand that title, but I understand it is what it is. But I've done a lot of cool things. I played the post-game after party for the Philadelphia Eagles. I was flown out there for the Philadelphia Eagles for the Super Bowl, which was a year and a half ago. That was probably the largest event of my entire life, one that's
wow.
Like my largest ticket item. I shared the stage with Cardi B and Diplo, along with about 5,500 of the team staff, the marketing partners and the investors of the Philadelphia Eagles, and had an incredible, you know, 9 or 10 hour party with people that inspired me. People like Pink were in the room and just unbelievable. I've done a lot of different things. I mean, I've played for companies like Wedding Wire. They've had me as their go-to a talent, I guess, option for their events, for their investors, for their partners, for their.
So hang on a second. The website where DJs and wedding photographers and brides and event organizers go to get work, to choose people to appear at their events, the website where they all go, when they want a DJ, they book you.
Right. They go to WeddingWire to advertise to couples. Couples go to WeddingWire to find information about professionals.
And when Wedding Wire has a party, you're the guy.
Yeah, they have about 8,500 plus DJ companies that advertise on their platform in 14 different countries. And
wow.
They come to me personally to do their events. And not just their events for their clients, but the events for their team, their staff, their learning sessions and so on. Recently, I became kind of an educator for The Knot Pro. Now, Wedding Wire and The Knot are one combined company. Wedding Wire acquired The Knot earlier this year. And now they're a global, even more of a global entity than they have been in the past. But I've worked for companies that did not before. And I've done a lot of interesting things, a lot of celebrities, people like Martha Stewart and Melissa Gorga. And I've worked for Kanye, and I've worked for a lot of interesting folks in a lot of interesting places, all looking for different things. But I would say the consistent thing would be like just results that turn out that get people of all ages to have fun. And I think that's one thing that I've really spent a lot of my time trying to perfect the recipe on how to influence emotion using other people's music to get people, whether they're in their teens, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, or 70s, and everywhere in between, to relax, to have a good time, to trust me, and to celebrate whatever moment is in front of them in style. You know, I spent a good portion of my life, probably like the last 15 years or so, trying to change a somewhat painful stereotype of a mobile DJ to someone that can be cool and is talented and is not just a joke and, you know, or a has-been kind of thing. And I've really tried to work really hard to push our industry to think bigger, not to settle, not to get comfortable, not to just be average, but to continue to evolve. That's really like my story, my mantra. And I did it all with, you know, I kind of did all I don't want to say on my own, because now I do have an incredible team, and I've had a team behind me now for the past 10 years. But leading up to that, I didn't really have a support structure. I never attended workshops or classes. No one really went out of their way to help me learn this craft. I had to do it by wanting to do it and really striving to push the bar in different ways. And I was a student of the craft, so I always wanted to learn more. I always wanted to do more. And I was never, I think one thing that exists now that never did before is there's so many learning resources available where, you know, if you go back, you know, let's say 15 years ago, YouTube was non-existent, you know, Instagram didn't exist. There was no Facebook, it was MySpace, you know, and if you wanted to learn this, you really couldn't find the content that is now readily available online. And I mean, even online presence was super limited way back, going back, you know, just 15 years ago, you know. So
I remember I remember setting up my first club website and setting up the first forum, actually getting people to come somewhere when the events weren't happening, that where they could chat. It was revolutionary. And of course, as you say, before Facebook, it kind of seems incredible looking back, but forums changed the world. But anyway, I don't want to go off on that direction just yet. What I want to talk to you about to start with is, because a lot of people are going to be listening to this and thinking, right, this guy's one of a kind. I'm never going to get close to that. This guy is clearly something special, something different. But I want to get under the skin of who you are and how you got to this, because I know that you've got humble beginnings, and I know that you've had a few twists and turns which involve some painful decisions to get to where you are now. And I think it'll be really useful for people to hear that. So if we can just take a minute to go all the way back to Jason Janai, the little boy, when was it that you suddenly realized music was going to be important to you? When was your kind of moment where music suddenly went from being nothing in your life to being a really big something?
Well, you know, I always had some form of music in my life. I remember getting in the car, going to the beach when I was a child, and my mom putting on different albums, and my parents always having music on in the house. I remember when we first got our first like household like radio, which had like speakers that stood 3 feet tall, and being outside on the deck, and my dad playing what did he play? It was like a Motown box set CD, like when CDs were first, you know, became a thing. And
yeah,
we got a 5-disc changer, and that was like the hottest thing. They put 5 CDs in and just put it on like autoplay, and it would like skip around CD to CD, 3-minute pauses in between playing each song almost, you know, like as the CDs changed.
Yeah.
And I just remember just always feeling something towards music. My parents were really, they weren't, I wouldn't say they were really into music, but they always thought it was important to play what they grew up on in the house. We always had a lot of like Beatles and Motown and Grease and all different random stuff was playing always in my house. I think my life changed when I was in high school. At the end of my high school life cycle, I was a senior in high school. I had wrestled all through high school. And I was on a track to become an athlete in college. And my senior year, I had a really rough run in wrestling. I wrestled all year. I didn't just wrestle in high school. I wrestled through the summer. I wrestled through the spring. I wrestled through the fall. And then, of course, through the winter months is when the main season is. For the final competition that has you go to what is called states in New Jersey, the state that I live in, I got to districts and I got hurt. I placed second. So I was really devastated. I went to regions and I had the flu. I had like 104 temperature. I was completely like dehydrated. And I lost in one of the pre-qual rounds, so which means I wouldn't be able to get to states. I ended up wrestling back and I took fourth, which was not good enough to get to states. I remember going to the locker room, sitting on the floor, crying my eyes out like just someone that like, you know, lost their puppy as a child, you know? And my world changed. I remember going out with my friends shortly thereafter and I went to a teen nightclub and I remember just watching the DJ play music and I just watched about 800 people on a dance floor, like singing, dancing, having a good time. And there were girls and it was awesome. And it was just what, and I remember that night probably changed my outlook on life in a lot of different ways, as crazy as that sounds. Like I just became almost fascinated by the ability that a DJ had to impact so many people using music and to make them feel good and to make them release and just do whatever, you know. From there, I did what I could do. I scraped up enough money to buy a set of Technique 1200s. I bought them in New York City on Canal Street. I put them on a train. I got them back to Jersey, which is not an easy task. I mean,
no, definitely not with you know, two of those.
235-pound boxes on a train. You're on a subway, on a PATH train, up and down stairs, onto like a local train to get you, you know, and this is like a 2-hour journey to get them back to the place I was living at the time. And I remember setting them up and just having a go at them. And man, it was just awesome. And I had some recordings of the trance records and stuff that I had at the time. And I remember listening the first time I listened to them and I just listened to how terrible I was. I mean, I couldn't even put two beats together, but I enjoyed it. And long story short, over the next sequence of, let's say, a year and a half going out, meeting people, I met, you know, a number of different people that, you know, I guess helped support me in different ways. And I just practiced every single day until like someone gave me the first opportunity to open up for them for 20 minutes. You know, it was like, that's all it took, you know? And man, once you get bit by that bug, even though there was no one in the club, it just, I felt so important. I felt so good. It was amazing.
And what did you want to be? Did you want to be a club DJ at this point?
At that point, I think that's all I really knew. You know, it's funny. Shortly thereafter, a friend of mine was like, you should try the mobile thing. And I remember going in and meeting this guy who had a wedding company. And I ended up going to work for him for a little bit. My first paycheck was $67 for a wedding. I was his DJ. He paid me $67 in a check. And I was pumped about it. I was like, wow, I can get paid to do this. Shortly thereafter, he started to train me to be like an MC, and I didn't really enjoy it. The type of service that this guy provided was very skit ridden. It was very It was very dependent on interactive routines. And that's where the industry really was at the time. So I did go through his training. I remember doing my first wedding and getting paid like $200 or something. I mean, whatever. I just honestly didn't love it at the time. And it was probably for a number of different reasons. One being the person that was running the company, and he wasn't really a good person. And I don't mean to come off negative. I mean, he had some dependency problems, and he had just things that impacted decisions that I was a young guy at that time. I wasn't even 21 years old. And to be subjected to certain things is just not, I think, appropriate at that age, where you really just don't know what's right and what's wrong, you know? And long story short, I worked there for a little bit, and then I went right back to the club world, and I stayed there for a long time until like my first opportunity opened up where someone had asked me to DJ a party for their corporation. And it's funny, I just think of the story and I tell it often. It's like, wait, you want me to DJ where? Oh, okay. Well, I don't think I'm your guy. Cause if you want me to do the Macarena with your boss, like, it's not going to be me. And she's like, no, I want you to do what you're doing here at this club there. And I can pay you this, which was like five or six times what I was getting paid at the club. And I was like, wow. Okay. Where is it? New York. Okay. What company? Mercedes-Benz. And I was just like, holy cow. Like, let's do this, you know? And that was really like the start of what is now known as SCE in my mobile career. I would say at that point, that's when things really started for me, because I wasn't adapting to someone else's style. I was doing things that I was doing events my way. I was doing it the way that I felt most comfortable, the way that I felt.
So there's so many things here. This is fascinating stuff, but I want to just talk about whether this was always your full-time job, whether you've always done this full-time, or whether there's been other stuff that your parents push you into or that you thought you ought to be doing. You know, was this always a hobby? How did it fit in with your working life?
No, it was always, at first it was a hobby, but then it became a part-time hustle. And it's what allowed me to get through college. When I graduated college, I landed an opportunity as an associate engineer in the telecommunications world. I had did this on the side, primarily in the nightlife world. I was working five nights a week in nightlife, and I was working full time during the day as an associate engineer for AT&T, a global company.
Wow. And how long did you do that for? That must have been pretty hard.
It was hard. I kept that calendar up for about 5 or 6 years before some of these opportunities in the mobile world started to really present themselves.
Mm-hmm. And was this something you thought that you should be doing, or your parents wanted you to do, or was it just kind of like there wasn't even a question? It's just what you did.
I was really tech savvy. I was really good with computers at the time, and I went to DeVry University, which is a technical university based in the United States. And I went there because I tried to go to a community college, and it didn't really work for me. It wasn't focused enough. I didn't have a good academic standing in the classes. I wasn't interested, and I was really like focused on other things. So tech school allowed me an opportunity where I was given a lot of granular mind bending kind of activities that kept me kind of dialed in, but I was also very interested in my future, because that's what I was. It was like, I know, coming from really nothing, I was putting myself through school. I didn't really have help from my parents. And I knew that if I didn't get through tech school, then my only other option would be I probably would have to go into the military, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I didn't want to end up going to war one day and have something happen to me. And I was really, really scared about that. So I went through technical college. And I ended up getting through, and I was a pretty good student. For my associate's degree, I graduated with like a B, like a 3.0 or 3.2. I mean, a fair whatever. I started working at AT&T. I was still DJing at night. And then I went back to school in the evenings for my bachelor's degree, and I completed that. And then my GPA went up to like a 3.7. And then while I was still DJing, I was starting my company. I went, and I was working full time. I went back to school for my master's degree, where my GPA was closer to a 4.0. I think it was like a 3.95, and I never actually finished my master's program. I worked in corporate America for just about 11 and a half years before I had left to focus on doing events full time. So, I mean, my career has been really interesting because it was never what it. I never went to school for this. I was receiving praise from events that I've done all over the place. And I just thought everyone else did great events. I didn't realize there was such a variance and people weren't mindful of so many different things that I considered, you know, like my first language. I considered that like, you know, hospitality. I considered that, you know, things to be mindful of and just courteous and things to do as a human. And then on top of it, you know, like, I've always worked at the craft of DJing. I've always tried to do really cool things. I've always tried to like push the boundaries. I've always tried to incorporate the newest of new. I've always tried to get people to trust me and to relax and to celebrate some of life's like most iconic moments, you know? And when you do all these things, like magic really happens. But when I left my full-time job, I left a career where I was on essentially an executive fast track at AT&T, where if I stayed the course, you know, like I was being positioned to be an executive level representative in some way, as long as I could have completed all the things that they needed me to do. And I left a really lucrative, very, I don't want to say easy, but very, very structured path to really focus on the unknown. You know, like I went from, you know, a very handsome six-figure salary with 10 weeks of paid vacation and retirement plan and health benefits to, you know, after 6 months of doing this, like, how am I going to pay my mortgage? Like, am I making enough money? Like, how am I going to grow this? What's going to happen? I know what it's like to sit on my kitchen floor and be like, I don't think I can do this anymore. I know what it's like to eat peanut butter and jelly and ramen noodles and to worry about feeding my daughter and not having anything. I know what it's like to work, you know, for a whole weekend just to make sure all of my team was paid, not even that I was being paid. I've lived on some really high mountains, but I've also sat in some really, really lonely, dark places at times. And the industry's taught me a lot over the past, you know, I've been doing this now for just about 20 years, full time for 10. And, I can tell you, I've learned a lot. I've gained relationships. I've lost relationships. I've been impacted by so many different people in a positive and a negative way. I've learned about culture. I've learned about, mannerisms. I've learned about, ethics. I've learned a lot about a lot of different things. And there's a lot of people that I know that couldn't make it in this business and have given up. And you know, I've seen people do the wrong thing over and over again. And
what's interesting here is you knew what it was like to hit a big low very early on with your failure in the wrestling world at school. And I'm interested whether you were into wrestling as a child because you wanted to be, or because school told you it was all you were good at, or whether your parents kind of pushed you. I mean, what got you into that in the first place?
Before wrestling, I was a soccer player, or you guys probably call it football on that side of the world.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. So I was always a soccer player, and I always excelled at soccer. When I was a freshman in high school, I was playing varsity level soccer in my high school, and I had an accident where I hurt my knee, and the doctor told me I would never run or walk. I might have problems walking, but I will never run again. So immediately after that, like, my soccer career ended. I played from when I was 3 years old till when I was a freshman in high school, so I think I was 15. That kind of like really impacted me. Immediately after the soccer season ended, wrestling season started. And I thought, because I've always been a stockier person, I've always been in really good shape, I thought I'd give it a try. And I just happened to be fair at it. I like the challenge. I think wrestling taught me a lot in life. It was something I did fall in love with for a lot of different reasons, but one of the most important lessons a sport like wrestling or gymnastics for that matter can teach, swimming would be another one, could teach someone that can relate directly to DJing, is you can't make excuses. Like, you know, when you're on the mat, if you lose, if you're a gymnast and you're on the bar and you fall, if you're swimming and you don't try hard enough, like, you lose and there's no one else to blame. Whereas in soccer, it's like, hey, that person never passed me the ball, or our goalie missed saving that. When you are on a one-on-one sport, when it's just you and someone else, it's a very surreal experience. And I think it teaches you a discipline and a work ethic that you can't find in a lot of other places. I attribute a lot of my success in my life to lessons I've learned in that one sport, to this day. And I attribute a lot of my successes in the DJ world specifically to that, as in doing the work, never giving up, because in order you have to do the work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, you know, so we've had the failure, the injuries, both in, as I've just discovered, mm-hmm. in your soccer and in wrestling. We've had you kind of like getting yourself through college, getting your grades up and thinking, you know, it's tech school or the army and I don't want to die. I imagine what I'm referring to here, a couple of situations where you've got to make some pretty lonely decisions, right? And then there's the giving up, you know, finally making it, getting that security for your family. And then this is the biggest one of all that I want to just ask you a bit more about. Deciding to go full time in DJing when you know it's going to be hard, but you've already kind of climbed out once and you've got yourself safe once. What made you do it again? Most people would just say, you know, I'll do this at the weekends. What made you jump in and say, no, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to really go for it.
You know, it's funny. I think about this a lot, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately because we're in celebration of our 10th year doing this full time, right? So, like, I'm doing a lot of big things, giving away a $10,000 wedding. I'm doing, like, all this crazy stuff. I'm going to have a big party. I'm going to do a bunch of things. And I, you know, I think about that moment in time where I just had enough, you know. There's a lot of things that led to my decision. One of the things was I wasn't happy. I wasn't as happy. I feel like I was going to work. I was, you know, I felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again. It wasn't stimulating to me. Where on the weekends, I was doing these events, and literally at the time, I don't really know if anyone else in my area was able to achieve some of the successes that I was able to do. I was getting feedback that was like godly, you know, it was like, what are you doing? You should be in Las Vegas. You should be in Los Angeles. You should be like, you know, this is crazy stuff, you know? And my calendar reflected it. I mean, I worked with other companies. I was really busy. I have my own following. I still did a radio show at the time where I was on Sirius and I was on FM stations. I did remix work at the time. I was still playing in nightclubs. And you know what? I started a family, and Andre and I had my daughter, and we were about to have my son. And I thought to myself, like, well, what if I just did one thing? If I just focus my time in one area, and can I make the money I need to live? And can I eventually have more time to myself? And that's what I originally thought. And I thought, you know what? I established myself in telecom, whereas if I failed in a year or two, I could go and land another opportunity. So I decided to take the roll of the dice and see what I was really made of, to take the challenge on at like my family's expense. I mean, but you have to understand, I was also very busy as a DJ at the time. It wasn't like I was jumping off with no work. I had a foundation, I had savings, I had things in play. It wasn't like I just like blindly walked away from an opportunity and just started, you know, something out of the blue. I had already been working on it, and I had worked towards creating my company to a certain level for 2 years leading into that. And honestly, I wanted to have more time for myself and for my family. And I didn't realize that after like the first 3 or 4 months that my company would then go viral because I was sharing content on platforms like social media platforms that were just emerging, like YouTube. And people were finding my content and the phone started to ring more. And then I was turning away a lot of work and I was scattering to get things, you know, to buy equipment and to make things happen. And I needed a bigger office. And it was such a surreal time. It was like, we were in the U.S. at that time, we were going through a pretty hard recession. So like everyone was like screaming, the world is falling. And here I am. And like my phone just kept on ringing because people in the unfortunate circumstances of life were still getting married and were having babies and were having parties and, you know, clubs were thriving. And like, it was just nuts, you know?
I've always thought that recessions are the kind of, if you drew it on a graph, you'd find that recessions kick in and so does the need to escape. And I think DJs are kind of insulated there from the worst excesses of people having no money because they kind of find the money to party because what else is left? Anyway, I don't want to go down that route. I want to go back to your formula, because you've said a couple of things that I think are quite revealing. You said, I didn't enjoy emceeing. You said, you know, you were in the club world doing a bit of dabbling in making music and so on and remixing and so on. A lot of people in that world think the money is in mobile, you know, especially people struggling. And they either have a dual life where they're doing events at the weekend, well, you know, some days, and then they're producing on the side and they've got a residency or whatever in order to make extra money. But a lot of people fail because they don't grasp the difference between playing to a club audience who've come to hear a certain kind of music on a certain night in a certain scene and playing to everyone who haven't come for you. They've come for a marriage or whatever. And they don't understand the difference between those two things. But here's you. You've made your name as someone who avoids the cheesiest side of all that kind of thing, if you like. And you bring the club style to these kind of events. And that was your selling point. What changed in what people wanted? What was it that changed that meant your time had come? And what did you bring to the table that was different to all these other club DJs who tried and failed at this?
I feel like there's a big difference between a club DJ and a wedding DJ. I feel like, you know, probably 85% of the wedding DJs can't survive in a club, especially a legitimate club. And I would feel that probably that it's probably closer to 75% of the club DJs couldn't survive like in a successful, I shouldn't say that. Maybe those numbers are a little too aggressive.
I think you're probably right. But, I think what we're saying here is that it's a very different thing and that you can't expect one skill can teach you what you need to know about the other, right?
Right. Just because you can slam a dance floor and play like the latest hip hop doesn't mean that you can – it's not that you can't technically play the music. It's just the way you program a night, the way you manage a room, the way you provide direction, the way you host or MC or speak is different. And very few people have – the ability that can adapt and translate to both worlds. I feel like it's an anomaly. A lot of people boast that they can do it, but I feel that very few truly have the ability to do it. And there's a lot of differences why. And I feel like club DJs make great wedding support DJs, you know, if they're teamed up with someone that understands how an event needs to flow and the goal of the event and all of that kind of stuff. I think that's easy. And a great wedding DJ could work in a club as an MC with a dope DJ who can maybe guide them and tell them what, you know, give them like some steering. And of course they could learn it over time. I'm not saying that, but I feel like the mannerisms and the etiquette and the style of play is totally different in both worlds. You know, I would say that I've been a DJ for a long time, so I know when to turn it up and I know when to play songs for 30 seconds and into the next one. And I know when to let a song breathe past a minute and a half or 2.5 minutes, you know, like I know my style for emceeing is really straightforward. It's, I believe in tasteful audience participation, meaning I speak when there's a point to speak. I speak when there's a call to action at hand or I need them to do something. I speak in a clear and direct fashion that is assertive and engaging and not like authoritative or, you know, mumbled. And I don't, you know, it's very, very clear and very precise. I don't overtalk. I don't overspeak. I enunciate clearly, but I only speak when there's a point to speak because I'm confident in my talent as a DJ and I use music as the catalyst to invoke the emotion. If you know what to play and how to play it at the right time, people will celebrate. They'll do whatever you want them to do. If they trust you, they'll take the journey with you. You know, and I think the trust starts the minute you speak on a microphone. If you sound like a douchey DJ and you have like that fake voice, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, blah, 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 blah. If you sound like that, people are not going to, they're going to, their bullshit meters are going to go off a little bit and then they're going to think like you're every other person, you know, like the club DJ, everyone throw your hands up in the air, blah, 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 whose birthday is it, blah, you know, you're with your best friend, put your hands up high, blah, blah. You can't do that at a private event. You can't do that at a wedding. You can't do that at a sophisticated gala, you know, like it doesn't work, you know. Do people do it? Sure. Is it the right way? I don't know. You know, for me, that kind of stuff has never worked, you know. I don't know if that kind of answers the question or provides a little bit more insight to it, but
it does. It appears to me like you're doing the job of two people. You're doing the job of the MC and the, if you like, the MC, that's a good, I want MCing is a lot more than just turning a microphone on, but you're doing the job of in the biggest sense, programming the event, making sure the event happens properly. But at the same time, you're doing the job of technically being a DJ who understands music and uses music as a tool. And I think we're getting to the heart of it here because club DJs know the second one. Mobile DJs have always known the first one. I'm sure you know, I know, there's many, many very great mobile DJs, if you like, who can't mix music. They're not actually that good at it, but they're so in tune with the people in the room and what's required that, you know what, they do a good job. But you seem to, I seem to get the sense from you that you feel like you're one of the first people to really properly connect the two and to give that kind of a new experience, because it is new, isn't it, having DJs in events who can actually DJ.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't know if I'm the first. I don't know. I just know that's just my, you know, when someone hires me, they don't hire me to be their MC, although I would be that person for them at an event that I do. They hire me because they want me to DJ their party. They're hiring me because they want the parties to look like the images on my Instagram, you know?
Well, this is good because you're bringing the third element in that I think is crucial here. So we've covered the elements of understanding what these events are, understanding what is required at a wedding, what is required at a big corporate event. The second one is the music. But the third one, I think, is social, is Instagram. It's the photo generation. It's the story generation. And I think combine those three, and we're getting to the heart of why your company exploded so quickly and why you've become so, you know, stupidly successful. And you are a master of social media for sure. And you've got a very interesting way of describing what a DJ needs to do on social media to get out there what he or she does. So talk to me about how social media has been a driver for your company.
Well, I tell you, without social media, without releasing vlogs or vlogs or whatever you want to call it, video blogs, without putting content online, I wouldn't be where I am today. The doors wouldn't have been opened. I wouldn't have attracted people to my brand. I wouldn't have attracted business to my company. My company probably wouldn't exist the way it does today without the social media platforms that exist today and the ones leading up to the ones that exist today.
Mm. So, yeah, tell us.
It's been, you know, YouTube single-handedly would be like my number one platform that has enabled my company to grow. That was in the beginning. Now I focus all my attention on Instagram because the millennial and Gen Z universes are gravitating to Instagram over Facebook or Snapchat over Instagram. But I really put my time on Instagram right now because the people that I'm targeting for work, which primarily sit in either the wedding space or the celebrity event space or the large production event space or the one-off, you know, insane party space or the nightlife space, all sit on the Instagram platform as number one. That's like where the generation of, you know, 22 and up, 22 to 40 year olds are primarily spending their time right now. Right. So that's where I spend most of my time. And, the content is curated. The content is managed. The content is thought through. The content is looked after. It's managed. And I put so much time and attention into Instagram. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out the algorithms. I'm trying to figure out the best way, the best times. I'm always reading and learning and doing my homework on everything. And I can't tell you, it's been amazing. It's been Instagram alone has been amazing for business.
For people who haven't checked you out on Instagram and kind of spent some time to explore what you do, you know, give us a sense of what is required on those platforms. Well, let's just stick with Instagram, seeing that's the one that you're spending most of your time on.
So first,
what is the aim of someone who is in this business thinking, I really need to get to grips with Instagram? What should they be thinking about?
So first off, if you're not following me, first off, I want to plug myself for a second and follow me. And that's at Jason Jenai and at SCE Event Group. Second off, if you think that your phone could be ringing more, if you think there's parties that are out there that you're not obtaining for whatever reason, if you think that you can be bigger than you are now, if you feel that there's opportunities that are not coming to you that exist, I would say that you need to focus some time into creating incredible content and placing it on platforms like Instagram to start doing that today. You need to create content to make things happen. And you have to be mindful of your content because BS content is something that can hurt opportunities as well. So you have to be mindful of what you put on the platform. And I have to say this, like if you're a DJ that is new to the game, or you're a DJ that's been doing this for 50 years, it doesn't matter. Chances are your brand and the content around your brand can be improved and elevated from where it is today. There's always more opportunities out there. There's always bigger opportunities. If you feel that you're not getting your value, you're not getting your worth, or you're not able to justify your value, if you put some time and energy into the social status, the social content, and into platforms like Instagram specifically, then, you know, you can make your phone ring. You can change a lot by doing so. Everyone that's out there, whether you're an individual that works for a company or you own a company, you have an individual brand, and their content around your individual brand funnels up to a company brand in some way, shape, or form. And all of it needs to be cohesive, and all of it needs to tell a story. We just went through this crazy exercise at SCE where we had, I think we had 3,500 posts on our platform at SCE Event Group on Instagram. I went through, I made Danielle, my office, basically take every single photo off that doesn't fall in line with like our 5 to 10 year plan at SCE. So I think we have less than 600 photos on our platform now on our Instagram account. We went back and we erased everything that wasn't like 100% spot on with the brand and where we want to go, because my accounts tell a story. My accounts show consistency over time. And my accounts really are dialed into, like, I feel like what people want to see, which is going to allow the phone to ring or DMs be sent. People are literally planning their events around our calendars at this point, more often than you could even imagine, because of content that they're finding on Instagram and then doing their homework and finding reviews and going, you know, polling friends and reading things and all this different stuff. It's crazy. Instagram alone has changed my business more than any other platform in the history of me doing this in this business, being in this business. It's insane.
So people, again, will be thinking, well, what do I post? What do I use? I think they're hopefully getting the impression now that although these platforms are sold to people as kind of instant, you don't have to think about it, just do something and get on with your life, that actually you need to plan. And that hopefully is clear to anyone who's in business that, you know, having a plan is a good idea. But still, especially some of the older DJs who this isn't something that comes naturally to them, just give people a flavor of the kind of thing, if you're trying to succeed at this, you should be posting or thinking about posting. What kind of content is this?
I think people want to see results. People want to see what the rooms look like at your events. They want to see iconic moments at events. They want to see unique things that are taking place at events. They want to see unique details of events. I think when you use posts, it should be like highlighting, you know, very, very unique content, iconic moments, or mega milestone moments of events, things that you're really, really proud of, things that you want people to see. Stories, on the other hand, need to be more of like the behind the scenes look. What's taking place leading up to those photos that are taking place? I think of stories like I think of how people watch. I don't know if you have like the television shows out on that side of the pond, like Flip or Flop or Flip This House, or, you know.
Yeah, we do.
They go in and they buy the house and then they like, you know, change it all around. Then they sell it for a ton of profit.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are more obsessed with, if you think about the premise of that one television show, they spend 55 minutes of the hour detailing the acquisition of the house. Then, you know, 48 minutes of the show is them fixing the house, right? All the different things that go on. And then the last 2 minutes is, hey, here's what we sold it for. Here's how much money we made. Let's go on to the next one. You know, so like, I think culture is really consumed with the behind the scenes stuff. For a DJ, it's, hey, I'm in my office during the week. I'm meeting with this couple today. We're meeting, their wedding is on Saturday. I'm preparing my equipment. This is what goes into it. I think that kind of stuff helps justify value and justifies the fact that this is bigger than what people see. Most people don't understand that when you're a wedding DJ, that you do things outside of the 4 hours of that wedding reception or however long it is, wherever you're listening to this. You know, I think people think that it's just you're playing music and you call it a day and you're done. They don't realize the magnitude and the gravity of all the responsibilities that lead up to that one event, to the one thing. So for me, I use my stories like, okay, well, guess what? I'm in the gym today because I'm taking care of myself, so I'm physically fit when I get to my wedding. And oh, an hour later, I'm driving to my office. And hey, I'm in my office. And these are the 15 people that work for me in my office. And here's the dog in my office. And oh, UPS guy comes in. Here's some new shit we got today. And here's what this is. And here's what that is. And, you know, now it's time for a team meeting. Let's show some pictures of our team meeting. And they see it's not just me. It's a bunch of us. And we're going through stuff. And we're trading ideas. And we're trying to do things bigger. And all right, now it's time for this. And oh, it's lunchtime. Here comes lunch. You know, like I try to do the behind the scenes so people see how hard we work and how hard I work and how valuable my time is, so that, you know, when I do give someone my time, they understand that, you know, there's a million other things that could be going on in life. And oh, by the way, I have a family. And by the way, I have this. And by the way, it's this, you know. And by the way, I don't feel good today. And by the way, I'm still doing it. And by the way, here we go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you should say that. It's kind of education as well, which is always a big thing with DJs, isn't it? It's educating your audience. They don't know what they don't know. I can be very cheeky now, of course, and come right back to something you said earlier when you said, you know, when I started this business, I wanted to make money and I also wanted a bit more time to myself. And you've just mentioned time a couple of times. Has that worked? Have you actually ended up with more time to yourself, or are you busier than ever?
I work more now than I ever did before. And, you know, but it's a different type of work. You know, like they say, you never, when you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I agree with that. But like, I work my ass off, you know, and I don't mind it. I'm not complaining. I've sacrificed a lot to have what I have, but I enjoy it. So it's different, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, when
I get that. I'm the same as you. I'm the same as you. It's
you know, it's
long hard. Hours, but it doesn't feel. Yeah. So listen, let's just round off that Instagram thing, because I just want people to get the value from that. You shared so much of use to people already, but just give people kind of numbers. How many times a week should they be posting a big milestone post? How many times a week should they be doing a story, and how many different bits should there be in that story? Just give people a kind of high level figure.
I feel that you should have one solid Instagram post a day, and it could be anything, and it needs to be quality content taken with a professional camera, or it could be like an iPhone, but it needs to be edited so it looks beneficial.
Yeah.
You know, Joey from Digital DJ Tips, I mean, man, he's been killing it on Instagram, doing awesome content. I've been watching him, and he's like, man, I've been taking your advice, and I'm doing this, and his pictures are insane. I'm so proud of him. I see it. I comment all the time to him. I'm like, dude, you're killing it. I feel like everyone needs one iconic image a day. And you know, it's funny. I spoke yesterday locally for a number of different professionals, and someone came up and he's like, I'm struggling with content on like Wednesday and Thursday. So I'm like, why don't you dig up content from an event that happened 6 months ago or 4 months ago or 3 years ago and post that and make something big, or do a learning thing, or do something about yourself, or do something about someone that you respect, or share something about a professional that you like to work with, or share about, you know, someone that you want to work with, or share something cool, or share something off topic. You know, I treat my accounts, they're all business. I don't really have a personal life entangled in my accounts, but I can say this. I put up one quality piece of content a day. Sometimes I throw off the algorithm and I'll wait a day or two and then I'll post again. I try to do story content every day, multiple times a day, just to let people know what I'm up to, what I have going on. At events, I try to share a magnitude of things. Sometimes I share a lot, sometimes I share a little. It really depends on like what's going on and how much time I have, and also like the gravity of the event that I'm in. I feel that the more content you share, the better it is, but you can't post too frequently because people will start to tune you out and your engagement will go down. I'm all about quality content, and do whatever you have to do. Schedule photo shoots and take headshots of you and your crew and your equipment, and professional photos of the things that make you you. Make sure that you incorporate your style. Make sure you incorporate what you achieve at your events. Show a consistent picture. And if you need advice, or you need structure, you need, you know, guidance, or you need something to kind of like look at for some type of inspiration, check out my personal account. Check out SCE Event Group account. Check out Joey's account right now, because he's putting up a lot of crazy content. Look at the content that's going up, and like literally see what it is, you know. And that would be, look at what other people are doing in your industry and your local industry, and see what's missing, and post from there. That would be like my advice to anyone that's looking to get their Instagram account on point.
I will post links to all of these underneath. If you're listening to this on one of the podcast platforms, I will post some links there for you to click straight through to this if people are interested. So, all right, we've covered kind of where you came from. We've covered the unique mix of things that came together for you to bring Clubland and Eventland into what you do, to kind of explode it all with social.
It's my Tomorrowland.
It's your Tomorrowland. Yeah. So you've got your company, you've got wonderful premises. I've been lucky enough to visit you where you work, and you know, it's great to see every DJ that works with you has got their own space in there. It's a wonderful thing you've built. I'm just interested in where you see it going in the next 10 to 15 years.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of cool things that I'm excited for on the horizon, not just in the performance event space, but in another kind of one of my, I guess, passions. And that's been like the sharing and the learning, I guess, universe. And that really brings us to why we're having this podcast. So, you know, I think a recent announcement that we were able to kind of share with the collaborative kind of partnership that we have is something I'm really, really, really excited about. As I get older, and I still have a ton of time ahead of me in the performance part of this business, but as I get older, you know, I want to continue to inspire the next generation of people that are doing this to continue to succeed, to continue to do more, to do better, to just continue to grow. And I want to use my experiences to help people push forward. I want to use my experiences to help our industry grow as a universe to a more respectable, space within the DJ community worldwide. So one of the things I'm most excited about is the stuff that we have going on here. And of course, like the mega events on the calendar, but I'm very excited about the learning opportunities ahead of us, Phil.
So let me fill in for the audience that I've invited Jason on here, not least because we're both very excited about working together, and we're working on coaching small numbers of students of the way Jason's done it and the things he's learned and the new vision he has for the way this whole industry should be going. And it's not the purpose for the podcast per se. The purpose of the podcast is for me to get people who I admire on and kind of, well, we don't get time to talk, do we? So this is just nice in itself. But it is an exciting thing. You know, Digital DJ Tips, the company I founded about 10 years ago, is a educational platform. And I sincerely believe that Jason has got a lot more than most people to give in this area. So people who might be interested in the kind of coaching we'll be offering can find out more about it from us at Digital DJ Tips. Whenever you're listening to this, it's long-term plans we've got there. But I think that's probably enough about that for now. But if there's one secret, Jason, if there's one secret to being successful as a event DJ and the kind of event DJ that commands big prices, that gets the best gigs, that does it in a way that they can be truly proud of, so proud of, in fact, they want to pass it on to the next generation. If there's one secret, what is it?
I would say there's two pieces of advice I would give. One would be, first and foremost, always be a student of the craft. Never sit on the chair and say, oh, I don't need to do that. I'm above that. I know that. I'm the best. I can never get any better. Because truth of the matter is, every single person in this industry can be better. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you are. I don't care if you get paid $500,000 for an hour, you can still be better. It doesn't matter. You can always be better. So always be a student of the craft. Always have your eyes open and be willing and open to the change that is before you and before the industry and before the world that we sit in, because change is happening almost every other day in music, in technology, and just the world we live in. The second piece of advice, and probably the most important piece of advice and the most common piece of advice I get when I interview my like artist friends, my producer friends, people that I feel are insanely successful, and it's something I always tell people as well, is in order to make it, you have to be willing to do the work. Don't take shortcuts. Put your time in, because DJing as an industry, there's a lot of ways you could take shortcuts. But I feel that the people that take the time to learn it the proper way, the technical skill, that invest in themselves, that invest in the craft, that invest in the hobby, that invest in the technical side of learning, that invest in the history, they're the ones that go to the next level. So always be willing to do the work. You have to sit in a chair. You have to do the work. You have to put your time in order to get to the next level. And don't be scared to do it. So always be a student of the craft and always be willing to do the work, or always be willing to sit in the chair and always be willing to put your time in those are my pieces of advice to anyone looking to take their career or whatever to the next level.
Well, thank you, Jason, very much for sharing that at the end. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people listening to this now thinking, you know what, I need to just push a bit harder. I know I've got this in me, which is if that's what's happened, then we've kind of succeeded. And also it's been fascinating digging into your history.
Yeah, so, these are some stories I don't think I've shared some of this stuff ever before. So, Phil, I'm pumped we got this out here.
Yeah, well, it's and again, you know, you've over-delivered. We were down for 40 minutes or so. We've done an hour. So, Jason, thank you very much for your time today. And this has been another episode of Tales from the Dance Floor from Digital DJ Tips. Jason, thanks once again.
Yeah, my friend. Thank you. And looking forward to everything on the horizon. We'll talk very soon.
Bye.
Thanks.